Hey friends, welcome back to Let's Be Real. It's time to launch my next book coming out in May called The Miracle Moment. The Miracle Moment is about taking the relationships you have to the relationships you want. Actually leaning into tough conversations to create connection instead of distance. So if that sounds like something that you're looking for, I want to invite you to come on over to NicoleEunice.com/miraclemoment. You can find out more about the book and even apply to be on our launch team, which is the behind-the-scenes street crew who makes this thing come to reality. So I would love for you to join us there, NicoleEunice.com/miraclemoment. If I deny the grief, I'm denying the love. If I don't allow the space for the loss, then in some ways I'm minimizing the love. Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Eunice, and I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together. Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Be Real. This is Nicole. I'm your host and I'm really glad for us to be together. And we have a little bit of a different podcast today because a conversation started last week with y'all over on, particularly on Facebook. And I just wanted a chance to talk about it together because it's obviously something that's on more people's mind than just mine. But I want to give you guys a little bit of background on how I've gotten to this place. So if you follow me on socials, you know that a couple weeks ago had a big ski crash, was like really excited to take a trip with just my youngest son. We went out to Utah and in the first day, in the first 3 hours, I fell and tore my ACL, stretched my MCL, going to have surgery next week. And just obviously like that completely changed my engagement with the world and life in the past couple of weeks. And even though intellectually I know that it's like something that people go through and it's not a big deal, emotionally, it's been a really interesting journey, kind of the ups and downs. And I was thinking a lot about those ups and downs and just maybe even my own realization on how much of life, like sort of the measure of life is based on how good, quote unquote, I'm doing, how much I'm producing, how much I'm able to kind of engage with the world, the way that I'm able to engage with my family or with friends, that those are actually, it turns out, metrics for the way I decide how worthy I am to be in the world or whatever, which is kind of a deep thought, not something I would have said I consciously was aware of. But in the spirit of being kind of down, down and out in the sense of like having to do everything slower, having to rely on other people, having to live with some uncertainty, even though I knew intellectually everything was going to be fine, I recognized that engaging in the world in that way, even really after just a week, kind of threw me off my game. And I was sort of yesterday processing through this and felt like, man, I'm really functioning at like a 3 out of 10. Like I'm functioning at 30% of my normal capacity. And how do I engage with that? Because I think the reason why when I asked the question, it was so helpful, or, you know, you guys were so engaged in the question, is because I think on some deep level, we all recognize we are going to have seasons like that. Like if you haven't had one, you will have one. Or if you're in one, you recognize that you have to like process what you're going to do about this time in your life where you're not at your best or you're not producing at your best. And one of the ways that my mind kind of turned during this time was like, what is it like to be in a place where you're not at your normal capacity? And is there any space between, hey, I'm producing and I'm like living my life and I'm killing it and I'm hustling and all that? Is there any place between I'm producing and I'm like depressed and don't have anything to offer the world and I'm just in a place where I've got to take and I'm not giving? And obviously, I do think that there is a place between production and depression. But what that place is, how we find ourselves there in that gray space between I'm operating at my greatest capacity and I am like fully incapacitated, how do we operate in that space? So I just want to share some of y'all's thoughts from this topic and just interact a little bit with you guys around this topic. So I want to go ahead and talk about one of these comments that you guys made that I really appreciated that was from a mom who said, I am trying to figure out, what does it feel like to be in this place? And I sense also that my child is trying to figure this out as well. And I don't know how to help them figure it out. I'm finding it right now. Here it is. This is from Cassandra. And she says, this is exactly what I've been needing to hear. I'm very eager in learning more because this is something that I've struggled with ever since becoming a mother. My 12-year-old daughter is struggling with something very similar. She's not sure how to navigate through seasons of change. Yes, I know. I know, girl. We're all trying to figure it out. She's not sure if she's depressed or not. I think this would help parents as well to give us tools to pass along to our teens and young adults to better prepare them. Cassandra, you're exactly right. It's so interesting when you are a parent because not only are you perhaps struggling with something, but you see that your child is struggling with it and you're trying to figure out how do you take care of your own business as a parent, while also like trying to serve and care for your child. And then there is a real slippery slope that can develop in there where we start to feel like our problems are causing our kids' problems. Now, there is some research to show that there is actually a contagious aspect to depression. Now, it doesn't mean that my depression can cause your depression. But if you're around someone who's depressed, there is a way that that mood is contagious. So obviously, as parents, this is one of the reasons why I'm constantly like preaching the concept that you have got to take care of yourself as a parent. Like, you got to take care of your issues. The struggle is real. The entire book is about the idea that if you want to help other people and if you want to love people well, you got to deal with your issues. And one of the times that we can recognize that we maybe haven't been doing that is, in fact, when we have teenagers. Something that is really interesting about life that I've always found really interesting is that often as a parent, when we are raising a child who comes to the age where we ourselves struggled in some deep way, when our child gets to that age, particularly a same-sex child, so if you're a mom and your daughter gets to her teenage years and you struggle deeply in your teenage years in a way that you have not resolved, the chances of you sort of being re-triggered and honestly like being less effective as a parent because you haven't dealt with your issues is very high. And we can use those moments when we're parenting and we come into these places, or it could even be your other sex child. Like if you have a boy who has a temperament that reminds you of yourself, let's say, and you're the mom. Either way, that is like a really interesting time in your personal story because of the way that that child may trigger an unhealed wound from your own life that you are now getting the invitation to deal with. You know what I'm saying? It's never too late to deal with your issues. It's never too late to become effective, to be more fulfilled, to be free. You didn't miss the boat if that's you and you're struggling with that. So I do want to say that in sort of the spirit of Cassandra's comment, what do I do? Like I'm struggling with this and now my 12-year-old's struggling with it and I don't know how to help them. So yeah, I mean, that's the reality, particularly of this year, as we're all in a pandemic and we're all having layer upon layer of loss in our life. And particularly the reason I wanted to have this podcast this week is I do want to address the murders in Atlanta and just like this whole nother level of our awareness being raised about Asian American prejudice, racism, hate. Like, guys, this isn't new. Like, if it's new to you, it's not actually new. Like, this is just, we're like peeling back layers of what I would consider just wounding and evil and hurt and violence that has been part of our culture. It's not new. It's been exacerbated by this time. And perhaps, you know, in the sovereignty of God, he's using this time to just raise everyone else's awareness, because anyone who's in the community is aware. But when others outside the community, particularly if you're in the majority, like when you're outside of the community and you start to become aware, what we need to be careful of when we're becoming aware is that we don't like act like this is like just happening right now. Like we're just becoming aware. And if that's what's happened to you, if you've gone through an awakening in this year, like there's so many things that you may have awakened to. You may awaken to your own anxiety that you have coped with in all of these different ways and you didn't realize that's what you were doing. Then you got shut up in your house. And in that being shut up in your house, you were like, oh my gosh, I did not realize I was like operating out of all that fear. You may be awakened to the reality that your marriage is not all that you wanted it to be. Then you were shut up in your house and you didn't have all of your other coping mechanisms. And you were like, oh man, I better figure out. Well, I hope this is your approach. I want to figure out how to live well with my spouse. Like we have been operating in different spheres for a long time. And now like the pandemic has crashed us together. You may be awakened to corruption in our culture and in our government and in religion and in all of these systems that maybe you just were like asleep to. You just didn't have to care. So you didn't care. And guess what? We're all in that boat. On some level or another, we're all in that boat. So you're in this time of awakening. And in a lot of ways, I think we're being awakened to, is there space in my life to not be functioning at 100%? Is there space in life to be human? That's what I would actually call it. It's like we're being awakened to the reality that, hello, we are all going to die 100%. We are all headed the same direction. It's going to come to all of us. We like to act like it's not real, truly. Like we are like wired to not believe it's real, but death is permanent and it's coming. It's 100%. It's a 100% diagnosis for all of us. And we're awakened to all of that. So if you've been operating not awake to this way to be human, then you may find yourself like, oh my gosh, I've got all this like unresolved stuff, or I don't know how to function here because I'm used to using anxiety and coping mechanisms to keep me going like on a hamster wheel. And then the hamster wheel stopped. And then when the hamster wheel stopped, I also had all of this, like, I had all of this content that was coming at me, all of this news and all of these feelings and all of this death and all of this evil and all of this injustice. And I haven't lived my life in a way to have a worldview that is like wired to handle that. That's the thing, y'all. That's actually what's happening is when we come to these places where we realize like, am I depressed? What is happening in my world? And we'll talk in a minute about how you can like know if you're depressed, but when you're just operating not at the same capacity anymore, what's being threatened is your belief system, your worldview, your operating system for the world. Many of us operate with a worldview that is not actually accurate. Like we operate from the idea of things like, if I'm good, everything's going to be okay. We operate from the belief system of, if I can control this, then I'll never get sick. We operate from the belief system, if I can create a world for my kids of comfort and safety, then they're going to turn out fine. We've got all of these unconscious beliefs that we're operating from. And a season like this is a time where we realize we're awake to the fact that we may, our circuit boards might be frying a little bit. If we haven't actually engaged deeply, I think it's really, I love one of my favorite quotes is from Carolyn Custis James, a wonderful biblical scholar. And one of her quotes is, the minute you ask why, you've become a theologian. And by the way, it doesn't matter what you think about God. Like, if you're asking why, if you're asking big questions of life, you are asking questions of origins, of eternity, of meaning, of what really like matters, what is eternal and what is temporary. And those are spiritual questions. And this is an opportunity for us to engage with some of those spiritual questions. So Cassandra, I'm going to get to that question about like, how do we know if it's really depression or not? One of the things that Heather says is, I absolutely feel this. I've been discussing the lack of lament and space for grief in our society. I think we are very bad at it, including most churches. Edward says, I feel like something's definitely wrong if I'm not producing work or just getting things done on a daily basis. It makes me almost feel like I'm not good enough or living up to my potential by the world's standards, which makes me feel depressed. And then I compare myself to other women, and I've had a lot of losses. It's been a struggle to allow myself to slow down and just grieve. It's almost like I don't know what to do with myself if I am not being productive. That's actually from Maria Lena. She's got double name in her Facebook. What a word. It's like I don't know what to do with myself if I'm not being productive. Like, if there was a force in the universe that wanted to keep you from becoming awake to yourself and to the fact that you have a place in this world, that you don't have to earn your place in this world, that you don't have to prove your place in this world, wouldn't a great way to do it, to make sure that you're always busy enough and that there's always so much noise in your life that you never actually engage the deeper questions? But another person in our thread a few people said the thought, I think I maybe have not allowed myself to grieve and I've gotten to a place of exhaustion, because this is from Greta. I love this word, because I thought I had to be on point all the time for everyone. See, Greta, what you're saying there, Greta, is I got myself to a place of exhaustion because I thought, and then you're actually stating a belief system. I have to be on point all the time for everyone. And then Greta goes back and says, I take a step back and I recognize there's nothing wrong with doing that, with actually taking a step back. So Greta is talking about her ability to see, like, I'm going to hold out this statement, this, some would say, agreement that I've made about how I am to operate in the world. And I'm actually going to pull back from that statement for a moment and say, is that true? Do I believe that? Do I believe that for everyone, or do I believe that just for myself? And why do I believe that? What do I think's on the other side of it? What do I think would happen if I stopped producing? Gina says, sometimes I feel like I need to rest, but it feels like I'm inadequate if I'm not doing something to carry my weight. Ah, Gina, you just named another belief. You said, I feel like I am inadequate if I am not doing something to carry my weight. Now we take that belief system, and if we're courageous enough, we actually can step back from it and look at it and say, do I believe that to be true for me? Do I believe that to be true for everyone? Am I holding myself to a standard that isn't actually accurate for humanity? And the big question is that true? Like, is that true? Are you only adequate in life as a human being if you're pulling your weight? Is it like, what if you're a baby? Is it okay to be a baby who doesn't need to pull your weight? Is it okay to be an old person who doesn't need to pull your weight? If you didn't pull your weight in life, do you somehow now lack the inherent dignity and worth to be treated as a person made in the image of God who, like, deserves to be treated that way? And all of these threads, y'all, they connect. All of these threads about the beliefs that we hold about ourselves deeply connect to our ability to be weak, to be fragile, to be not producing at our highest rate. When we start to unfold these things, these are actually connected to systemic issues in our culture. Because if we're believing this stuff and we're living out this stuff, you know what happens when you don't have enough compassion for yourself to believe that if you're not producing, you're not pulling your own weight? Something gets all twisty in your mind. And you will begin to feel that same way about other people. Now, if we were sitting across from each other, you might be like, no, Nicole, you don't understand. Like, I am a giver and I just give to people and I give without condition. I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure you do? Because what happens is that the way we believe life happens for ourselves in the deepest places in our internal operating system, it will bleed out into your life. And you're going to believe that for other people too. And if you've ever just slowed down and been like, what's going on with me? I feel so empty. I feel so dry. Like, I lack compassion and I can't engage. I've got fatigue around the constant, like, problems that I'm reading about and seeing, I'm like, yeah, that's a sign. Like your body is putting up a white flag. You've got like warning lights on your soul's dashboard that's saying beep, 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 like something's not right right now. Something is not right in the way that we're experiencing the world, because I actually believe that if we were to produce less and have more space in life for ourselves, like to deal with our own grief, like to just deal with loss, what happens is our heart cracks open and there's more space within our heart. It becomes more expansive to live into the hard things of the world. Like, we'll find that sometimes what I believe happens with us, let's just go for it. Let's talk about the Atlanta murders. I don't know what your reaction was to that when you found out about that. I don't know if you immediately tried to explain away what had happened. I don't know if you said, it's the news media that's making this about racism. I don't know if you said, well, I would need to know more information. I don't know if you said, well, this isn't about guns. I don't know if you would have said, well, what about that guy's mental health? But that reaction in your mind is a coping mechanism to keep you from lament, to keep you from grief. Because so many of us, like, that's a door that we just want to keep closed and we never want to open it. We're afraid that if we opened the grief door, we will start to mourn and we will never stop, because we have so many unresolved losses that we have never reconciled in our life. And this like ball of yarn that is our belief system, that is maybe based on some simplistic beliefs about humanity, about God, about life, about death, about eternity. Like, we know somewhere deep inside of us, if I pull one string out of that ball, this whole thing's going to fall apart. And I don't know if I can handle it. And I really believe that's a lot of it. So as a coping mechanism to not deal with that ball of belief that's going to get unraveled, if we start pulling one, we're going to start pulling others. To not deal with that, we will rationalize situations like the Atlanta murders. Instead of doing what we're called to do as human beings, which is to mourn with those who mourn, like instead of actually engaging in lament first, like just grieving first, not explaining, not rationalizing, not becoming like Encyclopedia Brown, like, well, let me figure out what really happened and then I'll let you know if I'm going to be sad about it or not. Guys, I have so much compassion for that, because I'm telling you that you're doing that because you don't want to unravel your belief system. But I want to invite you into the unraveling, because it's going to catch up with you at some point. If it's not your blown out knee, like it is for me, if it's not a moment of suffering in your life where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't live by this operating system anymore. Like, I can't keep producing because life has caught up with me, or I have to go through a tragic loss, or yeah, you have like a physical problem that develops, like you need surgery on your ACL, like whatever the thing is. If we're not able to process that, what you're scared about and the reason that you have compassion fatigue and the reason that you don't know how to engage with these big, deep issues of civil unrest and politics and nationalism and racism and whatever, your auntie that you never grieved 5 years ago, or the loss of your dad that you've never really processed, like all of those things are connected. Because if you've got this door in your heart labeled grief and you open it and you just feel like this stuff's going to come rushing out, and so many of my clients in their just deep courage and just in a beautiful way would tell me, honestly, I feel like if I start crying, I don't know where it's going to end. I feel like if I open this door, I don't know where the unraveling is going to end. It's like terrifying. Like, it's terrifying to imagine. And I just, if I could, I would reach out and like hold your hand and say, if you start crying, you will stop. Like, if you can let go, like there is a healing for you. There is healing. I believe that in tears. I love that Jesus calls himself the living water, because I feel like the actual living water of our souls and our bodies is tears. That's living water. It's pouring from you and it's healing. I really believe that. And there's often deep wisdom and intuition within you about what you need and what space is going to give you if you'll allow yourself to go there. But so many of us have honestly created an idol of what we believe. Like that ball of belief is more important to us than the truth, because the ball of belief feels comfortable and it feels known. And it feels like I can just keep using these things. So I can complain about the fact that I'm 30 pounds overweight, or I can complain about the fact that my marriage isn't all I want it to be, or I can complain about not connecting with my teenagers, but I don't actually want to do anything about it, because it's easier to just complain about the things in life that aren't working for me than it is to imagine unraveling this ball of belief. Because if I start, I don't know where it's going to stop. I have so much compassion for that, but I would just invite you to consider if that might be the case for you. Consider if you're a person who tries to shut off the news, who tries to rationalize what you're reading, that tries to like quickly make up a very, very quick statement, a simplistic belief about whatever's happening around you. Consider if you're a person who is like that and what that's doing for you. Because I do believe it's actually doing something for you. It's keeping you safe. But the invitation of life, because you will come to a time where you will not be able to produce, you will not be able to be busy enough to outrun pain, you can't be busy enough to outrun the questions. And when that time comes, what will your response be? Do you want to grow into the fullness of what it means to be human? Or are you going to choose what is perhaps an easier road, but it is not as fulfilling? And you won't be offering all of yourself in your relationships. There will always be a part of you that's held back. Because when we close the door on grief, loss, lament, space, questions, we actually close off a part of our own soul. Every single one of us. You know, when people say like, oh, that person's just not that deep, or that person's just like, what you see is what you get. I'm like, no, like everyone is a vast depth, because we are all created with a soul, every one of us. If a person seems to be superficial or seems to not engage in that way, there's a reason. It's not because they're not actually a person of meaning. Sure, we process life differently, and some of us process and struggle more and are more like into questions than others. But the idea that there are people who are not impacted or affected by life, by the deeper things of life, is just not true. It's just they're dealing with it in a certain way. And the way they're dealing with it makes it seem like that's not a problem for them, that they can just keep up in that way. But I'm like, nope, it catches up to everyone. Janelle says, I feel like if I had too much downtime, someone would end up finding me in the fetal position. I've avoided it because it helps me avoid feelings in general, but also feelings of inadequacy. The more time I've spent with the Lord and reading the Bible, the more I'm able to handle quiet. Janelle, that's a beautiful way that you're learning. It's so interesting to realize that you're actually avoiding feelings in general. So that's the thing about feelings. If you avoid some, in some ways, you have to turn all of them off. You can't have some and not the others. And so if you're taking some away, you're not having the full picture of yourself. So a lot of us will avoid feeling all feelings. And what a sad life to not be able to engage in the present, to feel things as they're happening. And this to me is the invitation of this season, this year, this craziness that we're in, is this is a chance to feel. It's a chance to choose to grieve. And for those of you who wonder, like, I don't feel like I know how to grieve. Grieving to me, I like to talk to my clients that grieving is a relationship. I want you to think of grieving as a person who's knocking on your door, who wants to come in. And grieving is a conversation where we allow ourselves to feel loss and then engage in what we're feeling. Like, because it's not just about the loss. It's about our life. Like something in what we lose has everything to do with what we keep. And that connection is so important that to me, grief is not a linear thing. It's not something that we go through and then we never have to do again. Like it's not a process that you can just take on and then be done with it. Like, oh, like let's do a 30-day diet. Like give me the 30-day boot camp on grief, okay? Wrong. Would never work. I could probably sell it. People would buy it, but it would never work. Grief is a relationship. It is a cyclical experience. In some ways, a grief never goes away. That's why I call it a relationship. It's like if you grieve, let's say you lost a parent. My husband, Dave, lost his dad very, very suddenly. Dave was 31. I was 29. One minute he was live and with us and wonderful. And the next, you know, 4 days later, he was gone. And when I think about the grief of my, you know, father-in-law, Charlie, it's not just the grief in the moment. It's the grief of every moment that he's now not in, which means every milestone is an opportunity to engage in that relationship of grief. As our son, Charlie, who's named after him, is about to graduate from high school, we will have a relationship with grief again. Because now, although we have made peace with Charlie's death, we can still be sad today that Charlie's not at Charlie's graduation. Because in our world, in our life, in a world that denies death and loss and grief, we would have never expected that. We never expected this. We never expected him to not be there. And so if I think of grief as like a linear experience that I can rush through or a process I can put myself in or like a program I can follow, it's not. It's a relationship. And when we engage with the grief of losing Charlie Sr., we're actually engaging with the love that we had for him. If I deny the grief, I'm denying the love. If I don't allow the space for the loss, then in some ways I'm minimizing the love, the relationship that was there, the importance of that relationship. If I don't allow myself to feel loss over something that was really important to me, let's say not a death, just the end of a relationship or a move, or even sometimes, you know, you can get promoted and move on and you loved your team before. If I would just engage with that relationship, grief has something to teach me about what really matters in life. Because the more we love, the more painful a loss will be. And if we're going to shut off the loss, then we're shutting off the love. And if we'll turn those faucets open to feel, then what we're opening ourselves up to, yes, is heartbreak. But in that brokenness, there is more room for love. And when there's more room for love, there's more room to be okay with what we can't explain. There's more room to choose to lament first, to mourn first, to just engage deeply with, you know, I'll just walk you through my process with the Atlanta murders. I saw it on the news. And my brother is Korean. And the first thought that I had was, I hope my brother's safe. The second thought I had is this what every Asian American and every African American feels when they experience a moment like this? Because even though I knew intellectually, like my brother's probably safe, you know, like intellectually, logically, he's probably safe. But to have the visceral moment of, I hope he's safe. And then to have my second thought be, is this the feeling? Is this what it feels like? I'm guessing this is what it feels like to be Black in America. I'm guessing this is what it feels like right now to be Asian in America. Is this what it feels like to be a minority? And then my next thought was, let me think about all the ways that as a woman, I mitigate my safety, my risks as a woman that maybe, you know, a man wouldn't have the same experience of. The hypervigilance as a woman traveling alone, all of the things that come with like the operating system of a woman who operates in this world. And I thought, man, if all of us could be opened up to that being our first thought, like if that was my first thought, not that I don't engage deeply with trying to understand the world and what, how do we live together? And what is the rule of law and how do we handle situations like this? But to not rationalize it as my first go-to, like my first go-to does not have to be trying to rationalize or move it away or push it away, but to actually engage with it. And I called my brother that day. And we talked and I thought, man, grief, loss, hardship is always an invitation to more love. That's what it is. It's an invitation to love. And if we will allow ourselves to be in a place where it's like, I'm not at my best. Like I'm not producing at every moment. My life isn't about like what I can accomplish solely. Like what if my life is actually more about how I am in this world rather than what I do in this world. Like how I go about being a human is actually more important than what I do in this world. And if you think about like the scope of your life and the fact that there's going to come a time in your life, if it's not now, there will come a time in your life where you will not produce as the number one thing that makes you who you are. You will retire or you will be sidelined or you will be waylaid or you will suffer. And does that make you less of a human? Or is it possible that we've all bought into a lie that I am what I do? And yes, of course, what we do is important. But if we could magnify how much more important it is about how I am a human in this world as far more important than what I do, then I think when we come to these seasons where we produce less or we are weak or we have to deal with our human limitations, where we're in a position where we need to receive from others, when we come to those places, we can engage fully and ask what we are to learn from the situation that we're in. How am I to grow through the situation that I'm in? And that, I think, can make your less productive time still productive. You know what I mean? As long as you're measuring productivity on how I am as a human. I read in Tish Warren's book, Prayers in the Night, that suffering or illness or weakness is always an opportunity for virtue. I just thought that was a wonderful quote. I'll put it in the show notes. I don't know the exact quote, but suffering is always an opportunity to grow in virtue. Okay, so I want to answer. I'm just going to check a little bit more. Just read a couple more thoughts from you guys, but mostly want to answer the question, well, though, for real, Nicole, like, how do I know if I'm actually depressed? And although I am trained as a counselor, I'm not giving you professional advice right now. I'm just your friend who's going to engage. So there's lots more ways for you to get more professional advice than this. But if you're just asking that question, first thing I want you to know is that anytime anyone asks me the question of, do you think I should see a counselor? My answer is always yes, because once you're asking the question, you should see a counselor. So if that's your question right now, great. And it might actually be like, well, maybe I should see a counselor and I can ask the counselor if I'm depressed. And that'd be great. There's some depression inventories that you can take. But generally, what I like to say to people about the difference between a bad day or a bad mood or a time where, like me, you're functioning at a 3 out of 10 is that depression tends to be global. So you're going to experience the same feelings of hopelessness, lack of energy in all areas of your life. So it's going to be in your work, in your relationships, in your personal life. They're all going to be impacted the same. One of the main questions I like to ask clients is, are you looking forward to anything? One of the ways depression can sneak up on us is, the big word for it is anhedonia. Anhedonia. I think I'm saying that right. Anhedonia. Probably hedonia. Anhedonia. And that word means I'm not looking forward to anything. I am literally just gray and numb about the future. And that is usually the thing that, if I saw that in my clients, that would be when I would say, like, hey, let's explore this a little more. Because if you've lost all of the things that you're looking forward to and life just feels like a continual gray day, then you may actually be slipping into a depression. And there's lots of ways to treat depression. Depression is treatable. That's really important that everyone knows. You can treat depression. And generally, exercise, sometimes medication, counseling, all of those things together, they will help you move through depression. So you don't have to feel like all hope is lost and this is the way that you need to be now for the rest of your life. You can move through it, but it does take treatment. Like, it's important to get treated. So depression will create that hopelessness about the future. And that's a particular part of it that I like to bring to people's attention, because people might not realize that that's a big part of, that's a big important thing. There's lots of ways when you're down. Courtney says, I'm just looking, as a pharmacist staying home with her children, I have struggled with this so much. There's lots of ways when you're down. I think one of the things we can do first is just give ourselves the space to recognize where we really are. That's the moment of revelation I had. So the revelation that I had yesterday, that I'm really at a 3 out of 10, gives me the opportunity now to reorient my life so that I can be okay with that. That means that this is not the time to start a new project. This is not the time to take on more. This is not the time to decide to clean out all of my closets. Like, those things, it's okay that those aren't happening, because I'm a 3 out of 10 now, but hopefully in a week or two, I'll be up from there. And when the energy comes back, I can use it appropriately. When we realize where we really are, we should conserve our energy for the most important things. For me, the most important things are the commitments that I already have, as well as my family. So I'm going to now need to make sure that I remove things from my life that aren't those things. I'm also going to ask myself, what are my self-care outlets that are really important to me? I am very like affected by music. I'm very affected by reading scripture. I'm affected by quiet. Those are all really important things for me. I'm going to ask myself, what am I doing to put those things into my life? So ask yourself the question, where are you really? And then be okay with where you are. Like, don't condemn yourself for where you are, but ask yourself, if my best friend was telling me that she was a 5 out of 10 right now, what advice would I give my best friend? Now give that advice to yourself. Be your own best friend. be the person who says, girl, don't add that to your life right now. Don't worry about that. Like, be the person who says, hey, let's move that 6 months out. Like, that is not necessary right now. You do not need to worry about that right now. Let's move off the, like, I got to care about every aspect of like everything happening in my child's life and where they're going to college, even though they're only in third grade. Don't worry about it. Like, if they're not doing great in math in third grade, that's okay. Like, it doesn't mean they're going to, one of the things that does happen in a depressive mindset is we do catastrophize life, which means a small thing becomes a huge thing. Like, we're like, oh, if my kid just struggled with one test in third grade, they are literally going to fail out of high school and become homeless. And like, stop yourself there and be like, hey, let's pull back from that. Like, let's not do that. Let's just live in this moment. Let's think about the next month, not the next 10 years. And I think that can help you meet yourself where you really are and be your own best friend in this season. And trusting that you can keep checking in with yourself. And if you have a trend downward, then there are those questions you can ask about, hey, do I need to get help? Many of you are going to trend upward and we're going to come out of this winter and we're going to come into a brighter place. And maybe you're going to be more open to allowing yourself space to grieve. If you've never done that before, like, hey, take a few minutes, go for a walk, go for a drive, let yourself cry. When you feel yourself starting to cry, let yourself go ahead and cry. Like, cry as long as you need to. See what's on the other side of it. See what your soul wants to tell you. You have far more wisdom within you than you may expect. So maybe that's a step for you today. It's like, hey, what if you just went ahead and let yourself cry? Next time you feel like you want to cry, just cry and see what happens on the other side, okay? Wow, guys, didn't know that's where we were going today, but I hope it's been helpful for you. Loved being live with you guys on Facebook, and this will be posted coming up this week. So looking forward to your thoughts. Send your comments, your questions. Would love to follow up with you. All right, talk with you next week. Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleEunice.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.